Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
In a crowded Athenian marketplace, under the hard light of noon, a man stands barefoot in the dust beside a shattered clay jar. He is lean, sun-darkened, wrapped in a simple cloak that has seen too many winters, his beard untrimmed, his hair wild. Around him move the usual actors of the city's daily play, merchants balancing their ledgers, matrons haggling over olives, young men flirting, slaves running errands. Most people weave around the broken pottery without a second glance. A few stop and stare because the man is laughing to himself as he grinds the fragments under his heel. When someone asks what happened, he shrugs and says calmly, "I saw a boy drinking water from his hands, so I smashed my cup. It was an unnecessary complication." Then he steps away as if nothing remarkable has occurred, leaving behind only dust and a story that will be told for centuries. The man is Diogenes of Sinope, the most notorious of the ancient cynics, and one of the strangest, sharpest moral voices in the history of Western philosophy. He owned almost nothing, slept wherever he could, begged for his food, mocked the powerful to their faces, and turned his life into one long act of public provocation. If you are looking for a gentle, measured guide to moral improvement, Diogenes is not it. If you are looking for someone who will strip civilization down to the bone and howl at its hypocrisies, he is your man. He was born around 412 or 404 BCE in Sinope, a Greek colony on the Black Sea coast. His father, according to tradition, was a banker or money changer. At some point, Diogenes became embroiled in a scandal involving the debasement of currency, literally stamping false coins. Whether he was an eager accomplice or a reluctant participant is unclear. What matters is that he was forced to flee Sinope. The man who would later accuse the whole world of being counterfeit was, in a sense, expelled for counterfeiting. The story goes that when he arrived in Athens, stripped of status and property, he sought out Antisthenes, a pupil of Socrates and one of the early cynics. Antisthenes preached that virtue is the only good, that it is sufficient for happiness, and that it requires nothing from fortune. He also preached it in a rough, abrasive manner that drove away most listeners. Diogenes did not run. He pressed closer. When Antisthenes threatened him with a stick, Diogenes supposedly bared his shoulders and said, "Strike, for you will find no wood tough enough to drive me away as long as I think you have something to say." That stubborn willingness to be beaten, humiliated, and still remain that would mark Diogenes' life as a philosopher. The word cynic comes from kynikos, dog-like. It was probably first used as a term of abuse. Cynics, people said, were like dogs. Shameless, scavenging, barking at respectable citizens. Copulating in public, living wherever they could find shelter. Diogenes embraced the insult and turned it into a badge of honor. Dogs, he pointed out, are simple, honest creatures. They do not hide their needs. They do not pretend to be what they are not. They recognize friends and enemies by instinct. They bark at strangers who threaten their pack. In a world of polite lies, he decided to live like a dog might be the most honest choice. His philosophy began with a radical simplification of needs. The less you need, he reasoned, the less vulnerable you are to misfortune, and the less entangled you become in the corrupting structures of society. So he cut his possessions down to the bare minimum, a cloak, a staff, a small bag for food, a cup, until the day he saw the boy drinking with cupped hands. He slept in a large storage jar, or pithos, near the marketplace. Not an actual wooden barrel, as later retellings sometimes say, but something equally humble. He begged for food the way a dog begs scraps. He asked for money from statues, to practice being refused. He lived, quite literally, in public view. This publicness was not accidental. For Diogenes, virtue is not something cultivated in private and hidden away. It is a way of being in the world that must withstand the gaze of others. Shame, he thought, is a social construction that often attaches to the wrong things. People feel embarrassed about poverty, bodily functions, sexual desire, or the need for rest, while feeling no shame about greed, flattery, cowardice, or cruelty. Diogenes flipped this on its head. He performed the former openly and ridiculed the latter relentlessly. Stories about him walk a line between history and legend. But even if some are embroidered, they point to a consistent character. In one, he is seen walking through the streets at midday, carrying a lit lamp. When people ask what he is doing, he replies, "I am looking for a human being." Not a man in the simple sense. There were plenty of those. But a genuinely human person. Someone whose actions matched the noble words everyone liked to use. Justice, courage, moderation, he never claimed to have found one. In another anecdote, Alexander the Great, the most powerful man in the known world, comes to meet him. The young conqueror stands over the old beggar and offers him a favor. "Ask of me anything you like," Alexander says, the way a king might toss a coin to a street performer. Diogenes, half dozing in the sun, squints up and replies, "Yes, stand out of my light." Alexander is taken aback, then laughs. Later, he tells his courtiers, "If I were not Alexander, I would wish to be Diogenes." The remark may be apocryphal, but its logic is clear. Alexander commands armies and cities. Diogenes commands himself. The king is moved by ambition. The beggar has nothing left to lose. Power recognizes a more radical freedom than its own. What is the point of all this provocation? Diogenes is not merely acting out. He is working with a small number of fierce convictions. First, that human beings have buried their natural simplicity under layers of convention, luxury, and false values. Second, that most of what passes for civilization, refined manners, elaborate clothing, ostentatious houses, solemn politics, is a theater of vanity and fear. Third, that the good life requires a return to what is according to nature, stripped of unnecessary wants and dishonest pretenses. For him, according to nature does not mean returning to the forest and abandoning language or society altogether. It means respecting the simple needs of the body, using reason to sort real needs from manufactured ones, and refusing to submit to customs that make us miserable or hypocritical. If a person is hungry, they should eat. If they are tired, they should rest. If they are moved by desire, they should acknowledge it instead of cloaking it in euphemism and guilt. Modesty about basic bodily functions, he thought, was often a cover for deeper moral cowardice. So he trained himself in shamelessness, but not as an end in itself. When he ate in a marketplace, which polite Athenians considered disgraceful, he was not just being rude. He was demonstrating that the so-called disgrace attached to eating in public was meaningless. When he urinated or defecated or masturbated openly, shocking everyone, he was trying to show that what horrified them was not truly shameful compared to, say, cheating a business partner or betraying a friend for money. If your stomach turns at the sight of a man scratching an itch in public, but not at the thought of injustice, he would say, your sense of shame is upside down. He mocked rhetoric and high-flown speech. When someone praised a famous orator, Diogenes allegedly spat, saying, I too admire him. He is so clever at saying nothing. He carried a plucked chicken into Plato's academy and declared, here is Plato's human being. After Plato defined man as a featherless biped, the academy was forced to refine the definition with broad nails. The point of the joke is not just pettiness. It is a critique of abstraction. While refined thinkers debate definitions, actual human beings, fragile, confused, full of conflicting impulses, stumble through their days. Philosophy that does not touch the way they live, Diogenes thought, is worthless. He also leveled his scorn at political life. Cities, in his view, are full of people who speak of justice while scrambling for power, who pass laws against theft while exploiting the poor, who praise courage in public festivals and practice cowardice in assemblies. When asked where he was from, he reportedly answered, I am a citizen of the world, a cosmopolites. That word, cosmopolitan, would later be softened into a lifestyle label. But for Diogenes, it was a rejection of the narrow loyalties that make people kill and die for patches of dirt. You are not, he insisted, fundamentally an Athenian or a Spartan or a man of Sinope. You are a rational animal living in a common world. Live accordingly. Because he owned nothing, he could not be bribed. Because he slept wherever he could not be threatened with exile. Because he had accepted humiliation in advance, he could not be shamed into silence. This gave his words a particular bite. When a rich man asked him why people mocked him, Diogenes replied, because you are rich and they think you won't hit back. When a young man asked how he could become famous, Diogenes said, by learning to live on lentils, meaning only the man who has first made himself independent of wealth is fit to wield any power. Otherwise, he will be easily bought. He preached work over talk. Virtue is not taught by talking, he said, but by living. He walked barefoot in winter to toughen himself. He slept on the ground to reduce his dependence on comfort. He compared himself to the trainers of racehorses. They do not feed them cakes and wine, but oats and water. Why? Because they train them to endure. He wanted to be, and to form, human beings who could withstand poverty, exile, insult, and loss without losing their clarity of mind. At the same time, there is an undeniable cruelty in some of his performances. Diogenes did not mind humiliating people to make his point. He has no patience for weakness or for small comforts. When he sees a child drinking from his hands, he takes the scene as a rebuke and smashes his cup. He places burdens on himself that many would find impossible. His vision of simplicity is so stark that it risks becoming another form of extremism. Plutarch, centuries later, would complain that the cynics had taken Socratic plainness and turned it into savage theatrics. Yet Diogenes' savage clarity serves a function in the history of moral thought. He is a necessary antidote to complacency. When ethical systems grow baroque, when philosophical language floats into abstraction, when religion becomes a series of rituals performed by people whose lives contradict their prayers, a figure like Diogenes crashes in from the margins to shout, act, and embarrass. He is not a builder, he is a demolisher. He clears ground. His influence on later schools is profound, especially on the Stoics. Zeno of Citium, the founder of Stoicism, studied with the Cynics after reading about Socrates. The Stoic ideal of living according to nature, of treating virtue as the only good and externals as indifferent, of cultivating independence from wealth and reputation, all of these are softened, systematized heirs to Diogenes' fierce dog life. the Stoics will add a doctrine of cosmological order, rational providence, and a more structured account of duties. But in the background, the cynic dog is always there, growling whenever they get too comfortable. From the standpoint of Western moral philosophy, Diogenes represents a radicalization of Socratic ethics. Socrates questioned people in the marketplace, exposed their ignorance, and tried to redirect them toward care for the soul. But Socrates still obeyed the laws, still went to war when the city called, still wore a cloak, still took modest part in the ordinary structures of Athenian life. Diogenes takes Socratic priorities and burns away the rest. If virtue is the only good, he asks, why not live in a way that makes every other good impossible to confuse with it? If wealth, honor, and comfort are genuinely indifferent, why cling to them at all? In one story, he is seen in the theater, not watching the play, but staring at the crowd as they leave. When someone asks what he is doing, he says, I am studying how one might move against the current. He practiced literal and figurative walking against the crowd. When throngs headed to see a procession, he walked in the opposite direction. When a war or a political scandal preoccupied everyone's attention, he asked whether their own cowardice, greed, and self-deception were not more deserving of scrutiny. He also developed a sharp distinction between false and true poverty. To lack money, but still be obsessed with it, he thought, is the most miserable state. You are crushed by scarcity and by desire. To lack money and no longer desire it, to be content with a crust of bread and a cloak, is a form of freedom. That freedom is not romantic. It means hunger, cold, social ridicule. But Diogenes insists that the psychic cost of chasing wealth is worse. Better to endure bodily discomfort than to warp one's soul in pursuit of coins and flattery. He was equally contemptuous of inherited honor. Nobility, he said, does not come from ancestors, but from one's own actions. I am Diogenes, the son of dogs, he might as well have said, and ashamed of none of it. When someone boasted of his illustrious forebears, Diogenes replied, it is as if you claimed you are good at running because your father had many horses. A lineage is not a virtue. A coat of arms will not teach you self-control. Sex, a realm surrounded by shame and euphemism in polite society, he treated as merely another bodily function. When asked why he masturbated in public, he replied, if only it were as easy to relieve. Hunger by rubbing the stomach. The shock is the point. He is forcing his audience to confront the gap between their prurient fascination with sex and their embarrassment at acknowledging it. By making the private public, he exposes the arbitrary line they have drawn. Religion fares no better. Diogenes did not deny the existence of gods outright, but he had no patience for ritual piety divorced from moral life.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Warm season's greetings to you all.
When he saw people praying for wealth or victory, he laughed. Better, he said, to pray for wisdom and self-control. When he walked into a temple and saw rich men hanging up tiny replicas of their limbs in gratitude for surviving a shipwreck, he remarked, I see plenty of offerings from those who are saved, but none from those who drowned. The gods, if they exist, do not seem to distinguish clearly between the virtuous and the vicious. So stop expecting them to do your moral work for you. For Diogenes, moral work means cutting through illusions. He saw illusions everywhere, in rhetoric that makes injustice sound noble, in social customs that equate wealth with worth, in religious practices that buy comfort without transformation, in the stories people tell themselves about who they are. If he can strip away a layer of pretense with an insult or a gesture, he will do it without mercy. At the same time, there is a tender core hidden deep in his harshness. Cynics like Diogenes believed that human beings have a natural capacity for virtue that civilization has twisted. Their fury is, in a sense, disappointed love. they expect more from us. They look at a man who spends his life chasing scrolls of law to win court cases and ask why he does not invest the same effort in becoming just. They see young men agonizing over their reputations and ask why they do not agonize over their ignorance. The dog growls because it knows the pack could be better. Diogenes' death, like his life, is wrapped in stories. One version says he died of holding his breath. Another says he ate raw octopus and got food poisoning. Still another claims he was bitten by a dog. The details are less important than the image. An old man in his 70s, still living rough, still unconcerned with comfort, exiting the world as unceremoniously as he occupied it. The people of Corinth, where he spent his later years, reportedly buried him with honor and erected a pillar topped with a marble dog. The city he had mocked recognized, in the end, that its harshest critic was also one of its deepest moral consciences. In the long story of Western moral philosophy, Diogenes serves several enduring roles. He is the gadfly of materialism, reminding us that our possessions often own us more than we own them. He is the critic of hypocrisy, forcing the distance between words and actions into view. He is the champion of simplicity, arguing that we can live with far less than we think, and that needing less can be a path to a different kind of wealth. And he is the prototype of the outsider philosopher, the one who condemns a corrupt society by stepping entirely outside its terms. It would be a mistake to take him as the whole of morality. Most of us cannot and perhaps should not live as he did. We have responsibilities to children, to patients, to students, to communities that cannot be fulfilled from a jar in the marketplace. Diogenes is not an easy model for parents, caregivers, or builders of institutions. He is a permanent critique, not a complete blueprint. But every age needs its Diogenes, or at least his voice in the background, asking uncomfortable questions. When we catch ourselves saying we have no time to think or to care, Diogenes is there, pointing at the hours we spend on entertainments or comparisons. When politicians wrap greed in the language of security or freedom, Diogenes is there, barking at the euphemisms. When religious leaders preach simplicity and live in luxury, he is there, sleeping under a portico, exaggerating his own poverty to expose the contradiction. There is a way to hear Diogenes, not as an enemy of humanity, but as someone trying, in his rough way, to defend what is most human in us. The capacity to live honestly, to make our words match our deeds, to refuse to let fear of disapproval rule our choices. He drags the private into the open, not because he despises intimacy, but because he despises hypocrisy. He breaks his cup, not because he hates objects, but because he loves freedom. If you listen to him with patience, beneath the barking and shock, you may hear a simple, hard question. What do you actually need to live a good life? Not what you have been told you need, not what your neighbors flaunt, not what advertisements or social media suggest. What, at the most basic level, is necessary for a life of courage, honesty, and a certain rough joy? Food enough not to starve, shelter enough not to die of exposure, some form of companionship, a mind that will not lie to itself. Everything else is negotiable. Few of us will smash our cups or sleep in public jars. But Diogenes can still walk with us as a kind of inner provocateur, asking now and then, is this purchase, this compromise, this act of cowardice really necessary? Or is it a counterfeit coin stamped by a city whose currency you no longer wish to use? In that sense, the exiled counterfeiter from Sinope spends his last years forging something different. Not false metal, but a harsh, demanding image of moral integrity against which we can test our own lives. There is also something important in how he uses humor. Diogenes is not a dry moralizer. He is funny, often brutally so. Laughter, for him, is a weapon and a medicine. A well-aimed joke can puncture pretension faster than 100 serious arguments. When he brings the plucked chicken into Plato's school, people laugh. And in the echo of that laughter, a question remains hanging in the air. How often do our abstractions hide the living, breathing reality we claim to describe? When he tells Alexander to move out of his sunshine, the scene is comic, but it also sears an image into the mind. The contrast between worldly power and inner sufficiency. A good cynic joke is a moral education in miniature. That use of humor is not accidental. For Diogenes, part of living according to nature is recovering a kind of childlike directness. Children say obvious, embarrassing things adults have learned to suppress. Dogs behave in ways adults have learned to condemn in public and indulge in private. By acting in ways that are outrageous in polite terms, but ordinary in animal terms, Diogenes is trying to peel back layers of social conditioning. He wants to show that we have learned to be ashamed of the wrong things and proud of the wrong things. His jokes are like sudden windows opening in a stuffy room. The air that rushes in can feel bracing or cruel, depending on where you stand. If you place Diogenes alongside other figures in your series, Plato with his carefully constructed ideal city, Aristotle with his catalog of virtues, the Stoics with their reasoned duties, you can feel how different his role is. Plato and Aristotle build systems. The Stoics build character programs. Diogenes tears all of that down to ask a prior question. Are you building on rotten ground? If the foundations of your life are fear of disapproval, the obsession with status, and dependence on luxury, it does not matter how elegant your ethical theory is. Your actions will revert. Under pressure, to the level of your fears and attachments. Diogenes tries to burn away those fears and attachments first. In that sense, you can think of him as a kind of extreme phase one in moral training. He is not the final word on how to live with others in families, cities, or professions. But as a first shock that reveals how entangled you are, he is unmatched. Modern listeners might experience a faint version of this if they try, even briefly, to live with less. To spend a week without buying anything unnecessary, or to say out loud in a social situation what they actually think, rather than what is expected. Diogenes is that experiment pushed to the limit and frozen there as a permanent rebuke. He also stands at the beginning of a long tradition of philosophical poverty. Later figures, from early Christian ascetics in the desert to medieval mendicant friars, to modern activists who deliberately adopt simple lives, echo his conviction that stepping outside economic and social competition can clarify what matters. They often add elements Diogenes does not emphasize: compassion, service, communal support. But the core insight is shared. There is a freedom available on the far side of letting go, a freedom that the rich and comfortable often cannot even imagine. At the same time, Diogenes' example forces hard questions about the balance between critique and care. If everyone lived as he did, who would raise children, tend the sick, maintain infrastructure, grow food? A city of Diogenes clones would probably collapse. Cynics typically relied on the labor and generosity of others to survive. They are parasites of a sort, but parasites who repay not with material production, but with moral disturbance. Whether that trade is fair is an open question. Perhaps every functioning society can afford a few such disturbers, but not many. For you, as a narrator guiding listeners through Western moral philosophy, Diogenes is a chance to pause the march of systems and sit for a while with someone who refuses to systematize. His doctrine is scattered, a handful of stories, some sharp phrases, a general stance, that is all. But that scant handful punches above its weight. Many later thinkers who know nothing of his technical positions remember a single image: the man in the jar telling the king to stop blocking the sun. In that image, an entire moral worldview is compressed about power, need, contentment, and the limits of external control. If you strip away the ancient names and settings, Diogenes' questions remain pointed for our own age of spectacle, consumption, and online performance. How much of what we do is for show? How much of our speech is crafted to win applause from our chosen audience, rather than to reflect what we genuinely think? How many of our needs are injected into us by algorithms designed to keep us scrolling and spending? If a scruffy figure showed up in our public squares today, mocking our brands, our self-presentation, our elaborate justifications, would we listen or would we reach for the block button? Diogenes cannot tell us how to design a healthcare system or a criminal justice reform or an educational policy. That is not his job. His job is to keep us from lying to ourselves while we do those things. If we say we care about justice, but tolerate corruption for convenience, he barks. If we say we value freedom, but sell ourselves for comfort, he growls. If we say we want truth, but prefer flattery, he holds up a cracked mirror and forces us to look. In the end, his life poses an uncomfortable choice. You do not have to become Diogenes. Almost no one can. But you do have to decide how much of his message you are willing to ignore. If you dismiss him entirely as a clown or extremist, you may be protecting parts of your life you know, deep down, are built on fear or vanity. If you take him too literally, you may neglect genuine responsibilities. Somewhere in between lies a way of hearing him as he may have wanted to be heard. Not as a template, but as a test. He asks you to inventory your attachments, name your hypocrisies, and then perhaps to break one small cup in your own life, a habit, a status marker, a needless luxury, and see what kind of freedom rushes in to fill the space. When the dust of his broken pottery settles in that Athenian street at noon, nothing material has changed. The market goes on. People keep buying fish, arguing over prices, angling for better positions. But one man has one object less, and in his mind, one chain fewer. He walks away laughing, lightened by a discovery he thinks anyone could make, that most of what we think we cannot live without is in fact only an unnecessary complication.
Midnight rails under silver moon, dusty boots on a winding road. A shadow's the only friend I've known since she packed up and let me go. Empty whiskey bottle on the sea, her laugh still echoes in my bones. Saddle's heavy with memories. I ride alone where the wind still blows. Nowhere else to be. Nowhere else to be. Nowhere else to be. The horizon gold, but it don't warm a lonesome soul. Every town I pass feels half her size. Every trail's haunted by goodbye. I whisper prayers to open skies, hoping someday my heart'll find a brand new path beyond the pain, where broken hearts can heal in time. Nowhere else to be. 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 Nowhere else to be.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious to buy chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.